Good morning, Auroville. This is Abhijit with you, and I'm broadcasting live from Auroville Radio again. In today's episode, we are again exploring education in arts, animation, and filmmaking. And today, I'll be covering another topic in filmmaking. So this week's topic is pre-World War I European cinema. Before World War I, European cinema was dominated by France and Italy. At Pathé Frères, Director General Ferdinand Zecca perfected the course comique, a uniquely Gallic version of the chase film, which inspired Marc Sennett's Keystone Cops. While the immensely popular Max Linder created a comic persona that would deeply influence the work of Charlie Chaplin. The episodic crime film was pioneered by Victorine Jessett in the Nick Carter series, produced for the small Eclair company. But it remained for Gaumont's Louis Foulard to bring the genre to the aesthetic perfection in the extremely successful serials Fantomas, running from 1913 to 1914, Les Vampires, 1915 to 1916, and Judex in 1916. Another influential phenomenon initiated in the pre-war France was the film d'art movement. It began with L'Assassinat du Duc de Guise, also known as The Assassination of the Duke of Guise, in 1908, directed by Charles Le Bargy, and André Calmette's of the Comédie France of the Society of Film d'Art, which was formed for the express purpose of transferring prestigious stage plays starring famous performers to the screen. L'Assassinat's success inspired other companies to make similar films, which came to be known as films d'art. These films were long on intellectual pedigree and short on narrative sophistication. The directors simply filmed theatrical productions in toto without adaptation. Their brief popularity nevertheless created a context for the lengthy treatment of serious material in motion pictures and was directly instrumental in the rise of the feature film. No country, however, was more responsible for the popularity of the feature film than Italy. The Italian cinema's lavishly produced costume spectacles brought it international prominence in the years before the war. The prototypes of the genre, by virtue of their epic material and length, were the Cine Company's six-reel Gli Ultimi Giorni di Pompei, also known as The Last Days of Pompeii, directed by Luigi Maggi in 1908, and its 10-reel remake directed by Ernesto Pasquale in 1913. But it was Cine's 9-reel Quo Vadis, also known as Whither Are You Going, in 1912, with its huge three-dimensional sets recreating ancient Rome and its 5,000 extras that established the standard for the super spectacle and briefly conquered the world market for Italian motion pictures. Its successor, the Italia Company's 12-reel Cabiria in 1914, was even more extravagant in its historical reconstruction of the Second Punic War, from the burning of the Roman fleet at Syracuse to Hannibal crossing the Alps and the sack of Carthage. The Italian super spectacles stimulated public demand for feature films and influenced such important directors as Cecil B. DeMille, Ernest Lubitsch, and especially D.W. Griffith. There has been a tendency in modern film scholarship to view the narrative form of motion pictures as a development of an overall production system, although narrative film was and continues to be strongly influenced by a combination of economic, technological, and social factors. It also owes a great deal to the individual artist who viewed film as a medium of personal expression. Chief among these innovators was D.W. Griffith. It is true that Griffith's self-cultivated reputation as a romantic artist, the father of film technique, the man who invented Hollywood, the Shakespeare of the screen, and the like, is somewhat overblown. It is also true that by 1908, film narrative had already been systematically organized to accommodate the material conditions of production. Griffith's work nevertheless transformed the system from its primitive to its classical mode. He was the first filmmaker to realize that the motion picture medium, properly vested with technical vitality and seriousness of theme, could exercise enormous persuasive power over an audience or even a nation, without the recourse of print or human speech. Griffith began his film career in the late 1907 as an actor. He was cast as the lead in the Edison Company's Rescued from the Eagle's Nest in 1907, and also appeared in many biograph films. He had already attempted to make a living as a stage actor and a playwright without much success, and his real goal in approaching the film companies seems to have been to sell them scripts. In June 1908, Biograph gave him an opportunity to replace its ailing director, George McCutcheon, on the Chase film The Adventures of Dolly, with the advice of the company's two cameramen, Billy Bidzer, who would become Griffith's personal cinematographer for much of his career, and Arthur Marvin, who actually shot the film. Griffith turned in a fresh and exciting film. His work earned him a full-time director's contract with Biograph, for whom he directed more than 450 one- and two-reel films over the next 5 years. In the Biograph films, Griffith experimented with all the narrative techniques he would later use in the epics The Birth of a Nation in 1915 and Intolerance in 1916. Techniques that had helped to formulate and stabilize Hollywood's classical narrative style. A few of these techniques were already in use when Griffith started. He simply refined them. Others were innovations Griffith devised to solve practical problems in the course of production. Still others resulted from his conscious analogy between film and literary narrative, chiefly Victorian novels and plays. In all cases, however, Griffith brought to the practice of filmmaking a seriousness of purpose and an intensity of vision that, combined with his intuitive mastery of film technique, made him the first great artist of cinema. Griffith's first experiments were in the field of editing and involved varying the standard distance between the audience and the screen. In Greaser's Gauntlet, made 1 month after Dolly, he first used a cut-in from a long shot to a full shot to heighten the emotional intensity of a scene. In an elaboration of this practice, he was soon taking shots from multiple camera setups, long shots, full shots, medium shots, close shots, and ultimately close-ups, and combining these separate perspectives into a single dramatic scene. By October 1908, Griffith was practicing parallel editing between the dual narratives of After Many Years. And the following year, he extended the technique to the representation of three simultaneous actions in The Lonely Villa. Cutting rapidly back and forth between a band of robbers breaking into a suburban villa, a woman and her children barricaded within, and the husband rushing from town to rescue. This type of cross-cutting or intercutting came to be known as the Griffith last-minute rescue, and was employed as a basic structural principle in both The Birth of a Nation and Intolerance. It not only employed the rapid alteration of shots, but also called for the shots themselves to be held for shorter and shorter durations as the parallel lines of action converged. In its ability to create the illusion of simultaneous actions, the intercut chase sequence prefigured Soviet theories of montage by at least a decade, and it remains the basic component of narrative film form till date. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for tuning in.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.